Well, we will say this class has officially started, and it is Wednesday, 21 September. And we started at 7:30. 2 p.m. CDT. The reason we note the exact moment that we start is because it is an event. There is a special kind of astrology that is called horary astrology or event astrology. Word horary comes from the same word as our word hour, or actually horoscope. And they come from an ancient Egyptian word, which is horus. The names that were given to things, in fact, almost all words in their origins are the names of gods. That different qualities or different functions or activities in the cosmos came from divine beings. We live within spiritual beings, and so the names of those beings eventually became words as we know them now. The divinity we're talking about in Egyptian times was called Heru, and the Greeks and Romans called it Horus. So the word hour has to do with the position of Horus. Horus was represented by the I've drew all over me or something. Horus was represented by the sun, and it was represented as a hawk, and the Egyptians walked the hawks as they ascended into the heavens and then came down, and so they said that the arc of the sun was like that, and so they had all of their time. They broke up the day into 12 equal parts, and that's where the word hour comes from. So the word horoscope actually means the position of the hour, because in the ancient world they didn't have exact times like we have now. This happens to be a very exact time. It's one of those newfangled electronic... It's one of those newfangled electronic clocks that is in touch with the transmitter from Colorado and keeps exact time. Now, we took the exact moment of the starting of this class because that indicates what the whole tone of the class is going to be like. Every moment is like that. The most common kind of astrology is not horary astrology, which is the sort of the I Ching of astrology. The most common astrology is natal astrology, where you take the moment of someone's birth. If you want a fancy name so that you can impress your friends, you can say, I'm studying genethliacal astrology. Or the real term is judicial genethliacal astrology. And if that doesn't wow your friends, I don't know what will. That may be all you get out of it. There are astrologies based on conception. The Babylonians and Egyptians used to do astrology that was based on conception, but it is rather difficult to determine exactly when conception takes place. In medieval times, when heirs to a throne were to be conceived, there were cases where the astrologer was standing behind the curtains as the deed was being done, so that they could determine, but you really don't know, because the conception from an astrological point of view is when the sperm meets the egg, and that can be as much as 3 days later. And they keep pushing that back, which gives teenagers more and more to sweat over, I guess. But if we look at a child, if you watch your child as it's growing up, it's extremely sensitive. And if you work backwards in time, the further back you go in time, the more sensitive the child is. And the increase in sensitivity is asymptotic, if you like mathematical terms. It approaches infinity at T0, which means at the moment of birth, the spiritual organism of the child is almost infinitely impressionable. And when it takes its first breath, the cosmic environment that is in the air is impressed within. This is based on a mystical concept that everything that occurs in our lives is recorded. It's recorded automatically. Every breath that you take has the entire atmosphere in, even more than you're sensitive to. And it's recorded within your inner vehicles, so that at the moment of death, or if you drowned or come close to drowning, or if you fall from a high place, or if you have a very bad acid trip or something like that, you see all of the pictures of your life that have occurred. It's sort of almost like watching a movie, only they're amazingly detailed. If you're doing spiritual work and trying to unfold your consciousness, it begins to happen to you on a fairly regular basis as you're being prepared to leave your body. You'll be doing something and you'll be doing something and images, usually from childhood, where we take in the images with more vigor, will come floating up in your consciousness. And everything is there. In fact, there are exercises to learn how to remember everything that has happened to you. So, you might say that your more soulful vehicles of consciousness are virgin at the moment of birth. And their sensitivity is extremely high. And so the first action is impressed on them, and you carry around with you that first moment all of your life, and that is the basis of the horoscope. It even works for entities that do not have such a sensitivity, like when an automobile comes off an assembly line and they start it up for the first time to run it off. That moment is the birth of that automobile, and you can tell whether it's a lemon or something like that from getting that at exact first moment. But now we're way away from the notes, but this may be the last time that I do this course for quite a number of years. It's one of those things that I've been doing every few years, sometimes every year since 1969. And it's always fun to do, but after a while, it's hard keep it live, because unless you're growing, you can't come back to the same things again and again and have it be new for you. And if it isn't new for you, it isn't any good. It is what I call Robert Frost's law. Robert Frost's law is, if there are no surprises for the poet, there are no surprises for the reader. And so hopefully I'm bound and determined that this year I'm going to have fun. And I'm just going to take a good time with it. And we are recording it this year, so maybe I won't have to do it very often. I have managed to acquire a bunch of friends in various cities in South America. And so they're eager for recordings of talks, and so I'm going to be sending them there. All right. That brings me to what I should have talked about right away. And that is, there are other classes. if you are really into astrology, tomorrow night and every other Wednesday is an intermediary astrology class. Every other Thursday, I'm sorry, is an intermediary class. And it means that you have to have studied about 4 or 5 years before you can get into it, because this is an introductory, and then there's a beginning, and the beginning course is about 3 years long. But the intermediate class is ongoing. We've gone for 4 years, and we probably have another 4 or 5 years going. We're taking horoscopes of 16 notable people, 8 women and 8 men, and we're doing a very slow, deep, thorough analysis of them. Tomorrow night is a very exciting night because we talk about the desire nature of Vincent van Gogh and how it relates, or how you can astrologically understand what was going on in his soul with regard to light and color. And so that's previews of coming attractions. What do they call them? Trailers, I guess, or something. I don't know why they call them trailers if they come before. Usually trailers come to follow behind, don't they? I'm not in touch with the modern language at all. A week from tomorrow is a class that is going to be about transcendental spirituality. That is things beyond concrete thinking and spiritual experiences beyond concrete thinking, and initiation into that kind of consciousness, and cosmogony and all sorts of things like that. The way it has worked is I did 7 years of talks on mysticism and mythology, and then we just finished up 5 years of talks on mysticism and Shakespeare. But there are a few things that I haven't gotten out of my craw yet, so that I want to go straight to talking about mysticism only. And so for this year and next, we'll probably be working on the Oedipus trilogy by Sophocles, who was an Eleusinian initiate, and very much involved in spiritual things. So if you're interested in transcendent spiritual awakening and some of the philosophy thereof, that's what's available. This class, we have to decide now what kind of a class it's going to be. We're going to continue on until the middle of December, but because I'm going to South America, give talks and escape the cold of winter, it'll recess until about the middle of February. And then it'll continue until probably the end of May or into June, depending on what you folks want to do. The question is, do you all want to learn how to, by hand and with tables and books, learn how to cast a horoscope? It involves simple mathematics, addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. It involves reading an ephemeris, a table of houses, but they're just tables of numbers, and a table of logarithms. And it comes with all kinds of elaborate explanation of what you're doing when you're casting a horoscope. But these days, almost nobody casts horoscopes anymore. They all trust the computer. And because people make errors with data, because they don't know how to cast a horoscope, they can't look at one and tell if something is wrong. So how many of you would like to learn how to cast a horoscope? Right about oh no, everything else we will do. It's just this is an extra added thing. Well, let's go ahead and do it. You don't have to buy any books or anything. I have all the books, so it will be a flea operation. We have to hand some things back and forth. And because it is a mildly complicated thing, and it's very hard to do in a whole bunch of people, and at the same time that there are explanations going on, it can feel a little chaotic. Don't worry if you have any problems with any of it. I will be glad to sit down with you in privy, especially if you're young and pretty. And I'd be glad to help you with your own horoscope. And if you want, I will be very glad to help you cast your to do your horoscope for you on the computer. I have Razzmatazz software, and it's all very easy. All right. So what next week we will cast the horoscope for this time. We didn't say Madison, Wisconsin. So we'll have to put that piece of data up there, and it'll take 2 weeks. And if you're not interested in casting a horoscope, you can play hooky for 2 weeks, and then come back. Because after those first 2 weeks is when all the fun begins. It's a very good thing to learn how to cast horoscope anyway, because it makes for a complete person. If you're going to be delving into someone else's soul, you have to be sensitive to what their soul nature is. And you have to comprehend about how they do things. Like literature majors especially say, I don't need to know how to cast the horoscope, just give me the horoscope and I will read the soul nature of someone. That's all fine and dandy, but what happens if the soul nature that you're trying to understand happens to be of an engineer? With your real clunky engineering kind of consciousness. You have to be able to speak their language and have their kind of consciousness. In other words, if you're going to study astrology, if you're going to work with other people in astrology, which is going to happen, it's always going to happen because you get enthused by it, because you start making discoveries about yourself and you get excited that so much of the world is astrological that you never knew, and then you start shooting your mouth off. And when you shoot your mouth off, then people start asking you questions. And they say, well, I'm just kidding around, but you know they're serious. When they ask you questions, they really do have something seriously at stake. And so you have to become at least compassionate and mildly understanding of artistic consciousness, of social consciousness, of scientific consciousness if you want to work with astrology. So going through the exercise of being able to follow instructions in a real simple way is a helpful thing to do. All right. After we cast the horoscope, we're going to spend 13 weeks going through the signs and their corresponding houses. We'll just go right straight through the zodiac, making fun of everyone along the way. You can do that astrologically because we all have the entire zodiac inside of ourselves, and if we're having a good time with it, we're having a good time at our own expense as well. No, we won't ridicule anyone, but we may have a few little jokes here and there. And we will then talk about the corresponding house, like how the sign Aries relates to the first house, and so on through the whole zodiac, through the whole horoscope. Then we'll have a sign miscellany, which will have all kinds of curious facts that ties everything together, looking at the zodiac and how it fits into history and cosmology and everyday life in very interesting ways. We'll teach you how to have an astrological party. I'm saying that as something trite because people do something like that, but it'll be a little bit deeper than that. And after that, we will spend 10 weeks looking at planets. Only those talks will be much shorter. Those will be down of about a length of about an hour, sometimes maybe even 45 minutes, depending on how carried away I get. All the people that have been in my classes before don't believe that they don't believe. He's a mathematician, and he talks about Richardian hours having 90 minutes for them. you know, it may be like that. I have a belief that I believe that everybody goes to these heaven worlds, that there's higher spiritual states. Absolutely everybody does, because they're all part of the same universal spirit, and that universal spirit can't destroy itself, so everybody gets there. But if there were something like the classical pearly gates with St. Peter with a book of everything you've ever did, I'm sure that two things would happen if I got there. One, St. Peter would say, well, you can get in, but you have to hook me up to the Ethernet, which is what my profession was when I was still worked. Now I laze away all day. The second thing is that Peter would say, yes, you can come in, but beforehand, would you look at my horoscope, please? And the third one would be, yes, you can get in, but you have to wait one Richardian hour. which would be my kind of purgatory. And then we talk about the aspects, and at the very end, those of you who want to have your horoscope looked at anonymously, which is the only way I will look at it, we will look at everybody's horoscope in the class relative to the class chart and relative to my chart, which can't be anonymous. But that's all right. Nobody, I'm figuring you all don't know anything anyway, so I can lay it off for anybody to see. All right. What we're going to do tonight is a very, very simple general introduction to astrology. And many people have asked the question throughout history, why study astrology? And of course, there have been many widely divergent answers to that question. Some, such as the mathematician and astronomer Johannes Kepler, didn't like it. He was the imperial mathematicus, and as the imperial mathematicus, he was, among other duties, he was supposed to do cast horoscopes. And he said, very reluctantly, I am being dragged into that mire which is astrology. But after doing it, just following the rules and doing his duty, for a few years, he chided his skeptical contemporaries and said, be careful and don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. And so toward the end of his life, he made a very remarkable statement that went somewhat to the effect of, there is no doubt in my mind whatsoever that every event that happens on earth is foreshown in heaven if we could but see it. And he was, this is the way it should be. I would actually prefer that most people in the class be at least a tad skeptical about it. And that way, if you, not so much that you close your mind, but so that you question everything and say, does this really work, or is it like this? And if you are convinced against your will, that's a much better kind of convincing. That's really the very best way to go about it. In fact, he did try to figure out all of the events that occurred on Earth by seeing them in heaven, and he improvised a whole new kind of astrology that's been carried out in Germany and Europe and places like that. It's actually been carried on a little too far. But more than there are a lot of things that go by the name of astrology that are pretty wild and unreliable. And there are people that will give you a reading on a conjunction of the moon and a 747 if you see such a thing happening in your life. Now, Kepler wasn't the only one who was skeptical became an astrologer. The person who followed after him, Sir Isaac Newton, was very much an astrologer. In fact, Isaac Newton wrote much, much more on astrology and alchemy than he did on physics. And the reason that we have the calculus is because he wanted something for more accurately determining the positions of planets. And he was in a conversation with Edmund Halley, the man of Halley's Comet, and Halley was scoffing at astrology. And Newton said to him, "But Mr. Halley, I have studied the subject." Meaning to say, if you have the experience of it and if you go into it, as far as I'm concerned, if you give this a fair hearing and if you study for yourself and it turns out for you to be not true, it's fine. The only thing that I have a concern about is a lot of people make a lot of judgments about astrology knowing nothing about it. If we're open-minded and do things fairly, that's the best that we can do. Right now, the statistics are that 63% of the people in the United States believe in astrology to some extent. But I don't think they know very much about it. And I think their belief is really unfounded. And if you're going to be let loose on the world, I would just assume that you knew at least a little something about it. Now, astrology, what we're going to look at is we're going to be looking at a lot of ideas, because I'm such an individual that I hate the idea of textbook learning. Because if there's textbook learning, there is no evolution of knowledge, because you learn what the generation before you learned and the generation before that. And if that's not enough, we have to be learning new things, and we have to be growing all the time. And therefore, what the most of the course is going to be is a presentation of ideas. And with those ideas, you will be able to think for yourself, or you will be able to use your intuition, and then you don't have to depend on any authority whatsoever except yourself. For some people, that is problematic, but astrology isn't immune from having neurotic people attracted to it. In fact, quite often, it seems to be a magnet for neurotic people. So the kind of knowledge that we're looking into, it's not like the social sciences. We're going to be looking at universal ideas, but we're going to look at universal ideas to get at specific things that we want and need to know. See, the social sciences, including psychology, which really isn't psychology anymore, it's sort of a glorified physiology that talks about the nervous system and senses and things like that. It doesn't even do with psychology as far as I can understand. But they all rely on statistics. And there are statistical astrologers too. I avoid them as much as I can, because that's not what we're looking for. You know, if it says that 85% of the people in this classroom are not going to be in an automobile accident, that's really important information. But it isn't what you want to know. You want to know if you're in the 15% or if you're in the 85%. And that's the kind of thing that you try to get at with astrology. There have been a lot of people that have been skeptical of astrology. One time, the science writer for the New York Times was skeptical of astrology, and he became a great adherent of it. His name is J.J. O'Neill. One of the founders of one of the astrological magazines came as a skeptic to a class, and he figured, well, I better know something about it if I'm going to pan it. And he sat through the class, and he not only became an advocate of astrology, he married the teacher. That's not going to happen in this case. All right. One of the most interesting variations of the question, why study astrology, was almost the inverse of that. It came in the form of why study anything but astrology. It came from the statesman and philosopher of Rome, Cicero. He started studying astrology, and he became fascinated, and he became captivated. And so he was so taken with it, he says, if this is true, why study anything else? Because in reality, everything in the world around us, seen and unseen, is part of the cosmic environment. Now, you can be a materialist if you like and think about electrons and photons and being waves and particles. But in any case, what we see around us, the stuff, is condensed sunlight. That's a broad way of saying it. So even the stuff in which we live is of cosmic origin. And it is all permeated by the cosmos. Astrology, if you want a definition, is an organized, long-term record of human response to the cosmic environment. Now, this is one of the weak points of astrology, but I think it's one of the strong points. Astrology doesn't profess or claim to say how astrology works or why it works, at least in a scientific, cosmological way. Throughout history, there have been all kinds of people that have put forth all kinds of theories about how astrology works. We hear a lot of them now in terms of electromagnetism, which are far-fetched, and in terms of gravity, which is equally far-fetched. And I find most of those very implausible or very inadequate. But you don't need to know that. This is, again, one of those problems. How much knowledge do we need? We could go very much in detail into astronomy if we wanted to, but I don't think it would really help, and I don't think it would really satisfy. It's like driving a car. You don't have to be an engineer that designs a car to be able to drive a car. It's helpful to know some of the basic principles of physics that are behind the working of the ignition system or the brake system or the internal combustion and all of those things, but you don't need all of that knowledge. So we won't really be going into that. We won't delve into that a lot. What Cicero was trying to get at in his fascination was the associative nature of astrology. What we live in is, that's enough right there. What we live in is, it has being. And that being or that beingness is common to everything that is in it. It is one universe. If it weren't a universe, we couldn't know anything outside of it unless we belong to that also, which would mean that was part of the universe. So everything is connected. But the connections are indicated in a very grand sense astrologically. Even though astrology is very infantile and very incomplete and frustratingly inadequate to answer a lot of questions, it's much better than any psychology that I've ever studied. And I've read quite a bit of Freud, quite a bit of Jung, and Erickson and their followers and people like that. And none of them gives as much understanding as astrology. So what we're trying to say is that we're going to look at universal ideas which are represented astrologically and see how they converge on a particular moment. It will look at universal myths that are timeless, and it will look at events like the vibrations of atoms in from moment to moment. St. Paul, when he stood on Mars Hill in Athens, uttered a very big mystic truth. What he said approximately was, is in it we live and move and have our being. I don't like to use the word he or God. It is enough. So we have this spiritual unity. But there are different kinds of associations. There are vertical associations and there are horizontal associations. In horizontal associations, everything is on equal footing. And there is an equilibrium that is maintained at all times so that every action has its reaction and every cause has its consequence. You can call it, some people call it karma, some people call it cause and consequence, some people call it divine justice or cosmic justice. I like to call it poetic justice because it always functions in that way. In the Orient, it's called the principle of action or the principle of necessity. There is no injustice anywhere in the cosmos. Anything that appears to be unjust means that you have limited information. We can try to introduce injustice because we are creative free agents and we can do that and we can try to bring chaos in, but the unity of everything is such that even our spurious introductions become brought into the totality of things and they themselves are subject to the principle of consequence. What we're talking about is cosmic feedback. Cause and consequence is cosmic feedback. We are all of divinity and we are all becoming in divinity and we are all becoming divinity. And as a result, we have to know whether our creations are good or not. And the nature of the cosmos is such that we get perfect feedback. Whatever we do comes back to us so that we can see what our creations were like. Really a wonderful, wonderful thing. There are also vertical associations, much more difficult. Some things are more important than other things. We all have a hierarchy of values. We are spiritual beings that think. We control our thoughts, at least if we practice. Sometimes we can produce minds that have a mind of their own. But we can, forgot about that one. No cats have straggled in yet. There are about four cats in the neighborhood. And I've been battling with them because I don't know what to do. They lay in my flower beds for the camouflage to get at the unwary birds at the bird feeder. And at first I started chasing them away and I didn't like that idea. So finally I had befriended them and you become a prisoner of love after a while. And you can't, you don't want to bother anything. And so now I'm letting evolution at the bird feeder take its course. And every now and then I have a cat to stroke. At first they were very leery of me because I chased them out of the flower beds at one time, and now they all like me. In fact, sometimes they stand at my door because I probably pet them more than their owners do. But all right, we are at vertical relation of things. Some things are more important than others. And our thoughts stimulate emotions, desires, and motivations. Our desires stimulate actions, and our actions result in concrete events. These are vertical associations. They start with us as divine being, and on each of those levels, in the mental level of consciousness alone, there is a horizontal relationship and a horizontal justice, as well as between the different levels in which we exist. In this, there is the principle of analogy. The unity of the one spirit is maintained on the horizontal by cause and consequence being two sides of the same thing. Just like the asking of a question in Harari astrology, the moment that has the question also has the answer in it. But the unity that is maintained vertically is through the principle of analogy, which is a principle we all understand and we've all understood since we've been in fifth grade. We saw the picture of an atom, or at least the artist's conception of an atom, and then we saw the picture of a solar system, and we said to ourselves, that atom is analogous, we didn't use that word, of course, to the solar system. And similarly, everything in the cosmos, from the one itself, right down to the separate individual ones as personalities, are ruled by that principle. It's called the Hermetic Axiom. The principle of analogy is the philosophical name for it. It's called the Hermetic Axiom. From the classicist who was an alchemist that lived about 600 AD. It goes, as above, so below. What has gone before in heaven will follow after on earth. Know this and rejoice. This is very important for the study of astrology, because it isn't just the connection of an atom looking like a solar system, looking like a nebula, and all of them looking like a flying saucer. It says that the character of divine beings follows through vertically into all of the things of the world. Thus, for example, we have something like the sun and Leo, ruling the heart. And the sun in Leo rules something like lemon balm, which is an herb that helps to stabilize the heart if it is erratic. So like everything is analogously tied together. And the sooner that one gets that concept in the consciousness and works with it and has one's intuition attuned with it, the quicker one will be able to learn astrology. One does not have to be a rocket scientist in order to do astrology. In some cases, a knowledge approach to astrology is impedimental because there is so much information. You could take all the power plants and hook them together and hook all the computers together, and you still would not be able to work out all the possibilities of astrology and all the knowledge. But intuition can go for the jugular right away. It gets right there. So if you trust your intuition, if you cultivate the divine teaching from within, which is what the word intuition means, you could do astrology relatively easy. Knowledge helps, but not so much knowledge that you suffocate the fire. The creative spiritual fire in yourself is what you want to keep alive and what you want to keep growing. I've seen a lot of people. I at one time had an astronomy grad student attend classes. And when it came to class in the horoscope, he was done in 5 minutes. He had everything down pat. But when it came to understanding people, he had, probably because he hid himself from social exposure in technical things and didn't have any sociability about him that was well developed, when it came to understanding people, he was clueless. Whereas, the same kind of consciousness that knows how to put a dab of something into a recipe knows how to get the intuitive hunch of what an astrological combination means. So maybe we don't even need an astrology class. Maybe we all ought to just sit in here and meditate for 90 minutes. Each week, I'm way away from the notes. I don't even know where I'm going anymore with all of this. Now, even though what we're talking about is a closed system, it's a horizontally closed system and it's a vertically closed system, you're free, completely free, as long as you're not doing it. But once you do something, that action automatically has a reaction. But we must never forget the creative free agency. Because a lot of people become very fatalistic about astrology. There is no condition astrologically that cannot be overcome. There is no condition astrologically that cannot be transformed. There is no condition astrologically that cannot be taken as an act of creativity. But when you do something, it's going to have its consequences. It's sort of like Superman playing ping pong with himself, or when the physics instructor takes that great big bowling ball on the pendulum and lets it go and it swings way out, and then it comes back and it just comes back and touches the tip of his nose. He has faith in the laws of nature in that way. Things are going to come back, but Superman can slam on himself, meaning to say that when things come back, we're free to creatively change them. What I'm trying to say is that astrology is not for somebody who is fatalistically inclined. If you're fatalistically inclined and think that your whole life is written out for you, you have no business in a class like this, because it is a curse. It's like being under a sword and knowing that that sword is going to fall on you, and then your whole life is preoccupied not with living but being concerned about that sword. Or people knowing that, hey, I'm going to have this great thing happen to me, and not preparing themselves so that they know how to use that great thing when it does happen. There are a lot of people who win the lotto and win $100 million and then blow it all in about 3 years' time because they weren't prepared for having that kind of thing in their life. That said, I have to temporize a little bit, because I've been studying astrology now for 42 years. And I'm probably one of the more experienced astrologers in the country. I've looked at thousands of charts, and I've been treated to all kinds of wonderful people. Everything from professors and savants to down and dirty street people, to people solving relationship problems in their life, to artists saying, where do I go next with my creative life? And after 42 years of it, I'm pretty convinced that most people are not even conscious, even when told, about what is going on in their inner being. And most people are prisoners of their habits, or of their mindsets, or of their desires that they can't seem to break away from. And very, very few people do rule their stars, and very few people use astrology in a creative fashion. Well, I'm going to be in trouble. Yeah, I didn't like these notes in the first place. I make the notes all over every few years because I've changed every few years. And the way I look at things and doing things is different. Let's just say we've done all of that. Because in effect we did. I don't want to become incoherently repetitive. Again, Cicero said, if this be true, why study anything else? Because astrology is about life, and it isn't life itself. And all the things that are required for success in life are required for success in astrology. There are three elements that are absolutely necessary for success in astrology or psychology or anything of a similar nature. Astrology first functions as a guide to observation. There's always a temptation to hand somebody a horoscope and have them say, tell me what you are. And the more you say, the less likely they are to do anything about it. Everything is not written out. And even if it is, you have to be able to observe it. Astrology is not a substitution for observation. We still have to use our eyes, we have to use our senses, we have to collect all of the information that we can. Astrology is a guide to observation so that we know where to look for something or how to look for something in someone's life. So that's one of the necessities of astrology, is to use it as a guide observation. A second thing is as a guide to intuition. You can use a telephone book or a dictionary if you like as a guide to intuition. There are people who open the Bible up and they poke their finger in the Bible, and whatever is there, they focus on that and their intuition tells them what they should do. I have a friend that lives his entire life that way. And he does quite well with his life. He's a biblical divinator. And he has complete faith in the Bible, and he has complete faith in the Spirit that works in him, and he does it that way. However, it's much better if the vehicle that you're using for the focus of the intuition is closely relevant to what you're trying to understand. And in that, I've studied lots of different things. I've studied I Ching, I've studied tarot cards, I've studied handwriting analysis, I've studied palmistry. But the thing that gives you the best scope, the big picture of things, and the most detail for your intuition to play upon is astrology. Astrology is the queen of roadmaps, a multidimensional roadmap for seeing the journey of the soul. Astrology is perfect for applying the intuition. And the last thing about astrology, especially as you get into it technically, it is used as an adjunct to good judgment. Even your intuition can be slightly askew because none of us is perfectly clear all the time. And we misjudge a lot of our intuitions. And our observations have to have relevance. And sometimes we can come to some pretty cockamamie notions from either intuition or from observation. And you need to ask yourself, is this true with good sound judgment? I think everybody's had one of those experiences. I've had one where a woman came to me and she said, I'm coming off of birth control and I want to have children. Can you tell me what I need to know with regard to having children? And I looked at the horoscope, looked at it for quite a while, and I said to her, I think you have to be very clear about why you're having children, because you may not be clear about your relationship to children. And you could screw somebody up if you were just having it as a plaything, or if you were just having it to hold your marriage together, something like that. But you need to be very clear about children in your life. The next morning, she miscarried. She was so unclear about her relationship to children that she didn't know she was pregnant. And that, I believe, was an error on my part. Maybe what I knew was correct, but putting something out there that strongly for somebody who's vulnerable is not good judgment. And that was about 38 years ago that that happened. It stuck with me ever since then. We've already mentioned that in order to really do well at astrology, you have to be a whole person. You have to be a scientist. You have to have all the feelings of an artist. And you have to have the intuition of a priest. That is, provided there's such a thing as a true priest. Above all else, you have to know yourself. The first and best use of astrology for almost every student, I would say for every student, is self-knowledge. If you don't know yourself, you cannot help other people. In fact, you can only help other people to the degree you know yourself. And this means a lot of inward self-contemplation. And it means a certain degree of purity. By purity, I don't mean according to any standard of any moral or ethical or religious system. You have to be clean. You have to be clean in your own consciousness. You know, because people who are clairvoyant can see things in your aura. They are the things that psychologists call constellations or complexes, that if you think a certain kind of thought and have a certain kind of desire for a really long time, the thought forms that you produce become an object in your aura. And that complex that bothers you, that very same complex can be seen as something objective, as something that's visual. But when you see it, you have to see it with purity. There is the statement among clairvoyants and psychics and people like that, is that you're always looking through your own aura. And if you're seeing a snake in somebody else's aura, you better be careful that it's not in your own. The phenomenon which psychologists call projection is a very relevant thing for someone studying astrology. If you're working with someone else, you have to be, the associations that come into my mind, I'm thinking of something that I read in The Onion 2 weeks ago. That would be the perfect example, but I don't have the nerve to say it. I have seen people who have had bitter experiences in relationships. Of course, through their own fault, but they weren't owning up to that. And then they pick up a horoscope for somebody who's having relational problems, and they just put out something, they put out their whole terrible, dark view of relationships, and has nothing to do with the reality of the person's life. What they're doing is projecting their own outlook. So there's another reason that you have to be open-minded because open-mindedness is a kind of cleanliness, is a kind of purity. You're going to have to deal with people. If you do a lot of astrology, you're going to have to deal with people whose view of the world is not the same as your own. And it's fruitless to try and convert somebody to your own view. You have to help them where they're at. And so it's very important in studying astrology to have that kind of purity, have that kind of inner clearness about things. So we've been looking at the horoscope or at astrology as a statement of what we've done before. In fact, you can pick up a horoscope and you can say of any horoscope, it is the sum total of all your past causes and consequences that are ripe right now. It's your own creation. You have chosen, or you have assented to this life, and everything that you're going to do in it is yours. That's one way of looking at a horoscope. It is where you stand right now in terms of history. That is what most astrologers do, and I think that is a great failing, because that moment of time, it's right now, now. I was just reading a short story by Faulkner about Native Americans who were procrastinating, and they were saying, tomorrow is just another name for today. And that moment that is right now, whether it's the moment that the class started or that you were born, that moment is the beginning of the future. It is equally valid to look at the horoscope as the what is available to you and what you have chosen as a means for projecting yourself into the unknown of the future. And I believe this is more what astrology is going to be as time goes on. Because eventually, as pig-headed as we are and as stupid as we are and make the same dumb mistakes over again and again, eventually we do learn. And eventually we won't be carrying a big burden of sin, or we won't be carrying a big heavy load of past destiny, and we'll become creative beings. And then the function of astrology will be to see the times and the seasons of what is coming for the future, and how your creations can work harmoniously with the times that are going to be. That's an exceedingly important thing. You know, if you know what kind of season is coming, you can prepare yourself for it, and you can create in such a way that you're ready for it. Jeez, I've never gotten so far away from my notes in my life. What? Yeah. Well, this is the first talk that I've really given in a long time. One thing, we're talking about what astrology is, and we're going to be talking about that for all the rest of the year. But we should also talk about what astrology is not, because there are a lot of pitfalls that one can fall into. Astrology is not astrolatry. It's not astral worship. One does not worship the stars or the planets or anything like that. It is true that the scriptures of all religions, including the Christianity, New and Old Testament, are filled with astrological references. If you knew how many astrological references there are in the Gospels alone, you would be shocked that it is an astrological book, because you know it is a condensation of what's taking place in the cosmic environment. And if the cosmic environment is represented astrologically, by the greater bodies and beings in the heavens, you would expect that would be the case. But one does not worship astrology or anything like that. A second thing that astrology is not, it is that it is not fortune telling. The quickest way to see me cringe is to ask me, would you do a reading for me? I don't like the idea of fortune telling. I like understanding character. Fortune telling is like, you know, you're telling a person you're this and this and this and this is going to happen to you. It's like painting them with a paintbrush. It is an insult to them. It's like saying they can't figure out for themselves what they are. However, working with astrology and thinking together with someone and intuiting together with someone, you can come to understandings together. And it can be a thing that both people are discovering at the same time. What your character is what your destiny is going to be. If you're lascivious, you're going to have venereal disease. If you're relaxed and cheerful, you're going to live longer because you're not putting the stress and strain on your body. What your character is, obviously, if you're reckless, you're going to have accidents. You know, if you don't hold things together. So you can tell someone, what good is it to tell somebody they're going to have an accident? If they're reckless, they're going to say, I don't care what you say, I'm going to go ahead anyway. But if you get a person to understand that maybe they are a little reckless and that it would be a good idea if they were a little more careful, you've in effect helped them to potentially avoid an accident. See, fortune telling never does much of anything because the people who want fortune telling are not prepared to deal with the information at any rate. Astrology is not a vague generalization. There are ideas. We create things from ideas. But the creation of things from ideas is something that is very exact. So we're going to be looking at a lot of general universal ideas, and we have to be very careful that we don't make generalizations that are vague and that condemn people to certain outlooks beforehand. Astrology is not a speculation, a dream, a delusion, or an ego trip. That is to say, it's all right to speculate that maybe this will mean this, but you have to be responsible. It's like ifing. You say, well, if I do this, what will come of it? It's perfectly fine to do that. But to lay that on to somebody else and say that this is your life, to put out all kinds of wild speculations, is not a healthy thing to do. And a lot of people like to do that. They like to say very grandiose things, and they like to say it in very abstruse terminology and things like that. And it's very much of a big ego trip. You know, like who can give the most elaborate astrological session with someone? Not a wise idea at all. Astrology is not a substitute for life. You still have to live your life. When I was a young man, I was extremely neurotic, and I lived in the world of cards. I would get up late in the morning, having slept through all of my classes at the university, and I'd go to the students' union, and I would play cards all day long until everything closed up, and then I would go out drinking with my friends and get intoxicated and go back to bed and sleep through my classes again the next day. And in that world of cards, each hand was like a new life. It had its little dramas to it, it had its idiosyncrasies to it, and it was unique. But it was also purposeless. And it is possible to transplant your neurosis into astrology so that you're not living in the real world with real people and becoming a kinder person or becoming a more thoughtful person or having the courage and conviction to do what needs to be done, as Garrison Keillor would say. But you live in the world of astrology. I know people who cast the horoscopes for every day of their life. And they're spending all their time looking at the horoscope, and they're not doing anything. It keeps them off the streets. But they're not living better lives for it. And astrology is one of those things. You can get in it. It is also not a foreign language and is not intended to be so. I have a strict rule that in all of the classes that I teach that follow this, where people actually start practicing and doing technical work, anything that you understand from astrology, if you understand that reality, you should be able to say it in the English language without the use of any astrological terms. If you really know something, you can put it in the language that everybody else speaks. It so happens that there are a lot of nice astrological words. You can say somebody is mercurial, or you can say that somebody has a martial bluster about them, or you can say that a person who's putting their thoughts together is considering something. And those are all astrological terms. Consider means put the stars together. Sider is the Latin word for star. But you don't need jargon. And the people, it'll happen. You'll be in a half stage when you first start studying astrology. You'll understand things through astrology, but the understanding won't be complete, and you won't be able to say them without using astrological terms. And you have to get over that as quickly as you can, and you have to make a great effort to put things into the language of reality. Astrology is not a weapon, but if you use it that way, it's a powerful one. It's very powerful. I have a friend that used to sit at the breakfast table with his wife and say something to the effect, you're doing that Taurus thing again. And he used it as a terrible weapon, and it just completely disarmed her, because he could observe it in such a way, not using it to build her up, but chopping away at her. Now he's graduated to a different kind of weapon. He belongs to a religion, or a, how would you say it, brainwashing something that is like a religion that does a really powerful number on people. It's not an alibi. I would have been there, but the moon was in Gemini. I just couldn't make it. If anything, it should free us from the need to make alibis about anything. If we know what's coming and we can see that there are this kind of problem is likely, well, forewarned is forearmed. And you're in a place that you can deal with the situation better than if you're just sort of dawdling through life. And astrology is not a fixed truth. That's one of the terrible things that has happened to astrology, and every generation says it's breaking away from the old astrology, and it always sinks back into it. It's something that's alive. I've frankly believe that all astrology should be done like jazz music. You know the tone rows that you're dealing with. You know everything that's available to you. Now you create spontaneously. And your creativity is determined how you can take the elements and use them that way. But you can be certain that if you get used to having astrology as a fixed truth, it'll get stuck. And it will, you won't grow. And there are going to be things that are going to be outside of your fixed truth, because your fixed truth doesn't have everything, because the whole universe is always changing. In general, I want to go back to one theme and then we'll call it a day, because there's no way I can salvage anything out of all of this anymore. And that is, I very strongly recommend taking some form of spiritual discipline. Something that purges you of mismotivations, something that clarifies your mind, and something that helps you to be aware of intuition. Apollonius of Tyana, who was a Neopythagorean, and the Neopythagoreans took a vow of silence for the first 5 years of their spiritual study. They didn't speak for 5 years. But he was already doing miracles when he was not able to speak. And at one time, somebody asked him, by what knowledge is it that you do your miracles? And his answer was, it is not by knowledge, but by the purity of my life that I can do these things. When there is no resistance to the divine creative power that works through and in each of us, there is nothing that cannot be accomplished. And a simple thing like understanding someone's soul nature through astrology is one of those things that is available to you if you have that kind of purity. We've missed about 3/4 of everything we're supposed to say, but that's going to have to be it for tonight. Are there any questions? No questions. Oh, my goodness. I mean, I have a class that I got a guilt trip to class and say I have an uninquiring class here.
That just means you got 15 more minutes.
Oh, no, see, this is I thought it would be about 75 minutes, and that's just about what it is. Yes. Yes, that's what we're all going to do together, starting next week. We're going to do the chart of this event. We won't take anybody's horoscope in the class. We'll do that all together. And it'll be loads of fun. Now, I won't say anything about sheep and goats or anything like that. All right, that's it. Thank you very much.